Guys, we were up to the bottom of Beta Manalif. So then the Gemara's next attempt at proving the definition of the word or is from the case of Bav Machteret. And so the case of Bav Machteret is what? Oh, and so it was the very bottom of Beta Manalif, goes on to Beta Bet. Yeah, so if you have a thief who tunnels into a house, right, let's in the middle of the night, so then what's the halacha?
You're allowed to kill
them. You're allowed to kill them. Right? You're allowed to kill them. No, that's like, well, for the moment, let's leave the classic case, because that's going to be important, right? But the, right, so who bothered opening up a chumash?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So the pasuk says, right, Imba machteret imatzei aganav v'huka v'meit, ein lo damim, if a thief is seized while he's tunneling, right, and he's killed, then there is no damim, there's no guilt. Okay, might mean other things, but for now we'll leave it as that. And then pasuk bet im zarcha shemesh alav damim lo shalem yishalem im ein lo v'nim kar v'gnevato. And if the sun has shone upon him, there is guilt. Right, there is blood guilt. Right, that is the psukim that lie in the background here. Okay, fine. So the question is what. What does the normally, and this you should have gotten from the Rambam, how do Chazal take the phrase in the Gemara of damim imzarcha shemesh alav? What does the Gemara say that it means? Correct, right? The Gemara takes it metaphorically and says as follows: bam machteret is somehow related to the laws of Rodef. Right, what's Rodef? What? Right, where someone pursues to kill. And the general halacha, when someone pursues to kill, is that you're allowed to or you must kill him. I'm not going to moment for get into the question. Because this is not the primary sugya, you should know that there are major questions in the sugya and the Rishonim as to whether the two categories are actually equivalent. Whether Bava Machteret is actually the same, they have certain similarities, but they're not identical. And that comes down in a large part to the question of whether the halacha of Rodef applies even by a suffix, right? Because here, presumably, we're not as certain that his intent is to kill. But we know he wants to steal. We have, and this is a machlok rishonim, is how do you understand b'machteret? Is it that b'machteret teaches us that even a suffik road is a rodef, or does it not? And b'machteret is unique, right? And therefore, a regular rodef would have to be a fadai rodef, where you could only kill a pursuer if you were sure they were trying to kill, right? Whereas machteret is unique. And then right, it gets even more complicated with trying to figure out the difference between two related categories of rodef and habala harga chashkim nargo. So the question, well, sort of, not exactly, right? Because the Gemara makes it very weirdly clear in Yoma in the context of what is, how do we know that pikuach nefesh is docha? And the Torah, that one of the sources are these halachot, because apparently these lives are not equated, are not treated equally. Right, the fact that there is someone who is a potential victim here and is being chased by a person, so the act of saving him is defined as an act of hatzalah, of saving, rather than one of killing, and actually more weight seems to be given to the saving of the victim than to the killing of the perpetrator. And then, right, what further complicates this is that Gemara seems to have, right, has two different presentations of Rodef and Habala Hargachash Gim Largo. Largo, that if someone comes to kill you, get up and kill them first. And there may or may not be, and that's one of the other major questions in the Sugya, a difference between killing a third party killing a potential Rodef, right, rather than the potential victim killing the Rodef, where there seems to be a lot more leeway for the potential victim in terms of how much certainty they might need, in terms of how much they have to care about using lesser violence rather than killing, right? With an outsider, it's clear in halacha that if they can, right, yachol latzilo be'achad me'evarav, if they could save the victim by, let's say, just breaking the potential murderer's legs, right, then they're not allowed to kill. And if they were to use excessive force, that would be considered murder on their half. It's not clear that the same thing is true of the one who is actually being threatened. Not clear that we make those calculations, right? So there's a lot of complexity going on in Ben Sirim or in Bamach.
Just
by interfering, you do put your life in danger. Meaning you now are the person who is being attacked.
Well, you're not. Meaning you're not yet, not unless he turns on you.
Which he obviously will when he starts to attack him.
If you're going and punching him in the face, not if you're on a second story, third story window, right. and you're a really good sniper.
Yeah.
Who walks around with a sniper? Who's on your left sniper watching for people teaching other people?
I don't know. Shmuel David carries a gun on him, right? If Shmuel David is in your, is in 35, and he's one floor up. Right out on the Mirpeset, his life is probably not in danger if people are running around, but he has his gun on him, right? Assuming the other guy doesn't have a gun because he can shoot up. But right, if the guy is chasing someone with a knife and he happens to be there with his gun, right, he's not in danger. What's the person going to do, right? Turn around, run through the apartment, come up, figure out the code, right? In that time, he can just sort of be standing there with his gun, right? He does have the advantage. Okay, but you know you'd be really at a disadvantage if you're climbing up a balcony while someone else has a gun to your head. Right? I'm saying, like, you can come up with easy... My point is simply you can come up with situations in which you can save the person without yourself becoming a potential victim. Right? Not vast majority of cases. What are you talking about? What? What do you mean? If the guy... It depends, right? If... The person who's running after him is, you know, if you are, 6'10", right, and you are, 6'10", bodybuilder with, and you happen to have a metal bat on you, right, and you see someone who's, 5'6" and weak, but chasing someone who's 4'3", and weaker, right, you're probably not in so much danger. So then you might have to figure it out. But again. No, there might be a more expansive one. Right? That's exactly what I'm saying. In Bava Machteret, where someone's tunneling into your house, right, may be more expansive because it's saving yourself rather than others. And that's why I'm saying the full sugya is very, very complex. And even though I've seen many people who are giving Shiram Sachim or write books on Sachim use this as an excuse to give full shirim on Bava Machteret, because, it's a fascinating topic. I'm going to limit myself, but I just sort of threw out some of the conceptual issues. But what I want to focus on is specifically this idea of Imzarcha Lav HaShemesh. Okay, so the way, going back to what we said is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Imzarcha Lav HaShemesh means that if it's clear to you that the person is not trying to come and kill you, and the Gemara has one case in which you can be sure that the person tunneling into your house to steal from you is only trying to steal and not kill, and that is? A father is tunneling in to steal from his son, not the other way around.
Right?
The Gemara said if a son is tunneling in to steal his father, the father cannot be sure that his son is not out to kill him. It's only the mercy that a father has on a child that can make you that certain. But then the Gemara says, well, what if you have other people who have relationships that are that unique, fine. But fundamentally, that's the case that the Gemara brings up. Yeah. You can't do anything. If the person is dead, you can't do anything. Yes. Rodev is only, the halachot of killing the Rodev are only to protect the initial victim. You cannot, there's no vigilante justice in Rodev. Right, post facto, so then he's just a Rodif again. The reason to kill him is not because he already killed, because he still ruined it, just on somebody else. Right? But if it's not, if there's no worry about that, then you can't do anything. Right? That's the job of the courts. I mean, what are you talking about? If you're talking about a random shooter who's just going on a rampage, then yeah, then he might still be a rodef. But if you see someone chasing after someone and saying, you cheated, right? You slept with my wife, right? I'm going to kill you. You can be reasonably sure that he's probably not going to kill somebody else, maybe the wife. I don't know, right? But what? Yes. Good morning. What? And I'm saying there are times when you look at it when it's clear. What?
There's no other witnesses. You know the guy, like, you're the only witness. You know the guy's not going to get.
Yeah, too bad. Invested. Too bad. Right? Right? This is not vigilante justice. Rodez is
so
about stealing. Who's okay? Pronouns. Yeah, stop pronouns.
You,
what?
Yeah. They end up killing them.
Then
you're allowed. So then that's a gol adam. That's different. So
that was only an accident. They're allowed to.
No, them. Only an accident. They are protected if they go to the Ir Miklat.
So everyone's on purpose.
Sure, but that's a yes. If you limit the case to that, that if to a relative, then we can then the halacha will be different. Yes. What? So this is part of the complexity. If you are chasing someone to kill somebody, so if you're justified, then no, the din of rodef does not apply. That's part of the complexity. But no, if you are justified in what you're doing, you do not take on the status of a rodef. However, it's not true of Abba Laharagicha Hashgeim Bargo. That if you are being... Right, so the Gemara's classic, very counterintuitive case is that in the ninth parak of Sanhedrin, we have the halachot of Kanaim Poginbo. What is Kanaim Poginbo? Yeah, that the zealot can kill certain people, right? So, Bol Aramit, right? So, if the zealot comes and sees someone, right, sleeping with a non-Jewish woman, so there is no capital punishment, but if someone qualifies as a zealot, right, Kanaim Poginbo, they can, in the middle of the act, right, they could, right, stop it by killing them, right? And the classic case is
Pinchas,
right? Pinchas killing Zimri. And then the Gemara says, okay, but what if hafacho Zimri v'harag the Pinchas? What if Zimri turns around and kills Pinchas? What's the halacha? Nope. The Torah says, the Gemara says he's fine. It is mutar for him to kill. And as many of the, and this is one of the big questions in the sugya, is why Pinchas is allowed to kill him. That's true, but he doesn't have to kill him. And therefore, Zimri is acting in self-defense. And despite the fact that he could more easily solve this problem by simply stopping to sleep with Kazbi, right? If he turns around and kills Pinchas, he is exempt. A third party cannot kill Pinchas because Pinchas is allowed to do what he's doing, but Zimri himself can kill Pinchas. You're assuming that he turned around and was not still involved in coitus, right? But maybe he is capable of multitasking. Exactly. Yeah. What? Yes, exactly. What? Yes, multitasking. Sure. Look, the Gemara doesn't always bring the cases that are the most realistic. It's just presenting an interesting conceptual possibility here. Okay? Ellie's like, what did I just walk in for?
I feel like I'm
in your
shoes right now.
Yeah. What? Exactly, right.
What shoes are those?
Walking in.
What?
Of those? Yeah, no. Okay. With that as background, what I want to do is, so the Gemara here addresses this issue. What does the Gemara say? So... Meitve, two lines from the bottom of Ben Amud Aleph. Lo'or Yakum Rotseach, right? So it's quoting Eov. So obviously, you are the world expert on Eve now, right? Yes, yes. I was talking about Mordechai. Don't worry, I'm not expecting all of you.
Is Eve Job?
Job, but yes.
Job?
Job.
Job?
Job.
But it's not either.
Job. That is how it's pronounced.
I think we should be Eve.
Oh, right. You also have a Charuza and Eve. Oh, good. So I can ask you and take let Mordechai off the hook.
Yes.
But I know you're not up to that parak, and I know that I did do this parak already in Mordechai. Right, so the Pasuk in Eiv says, L'or yakum rotzeach yikdala nive avyonu v'layla yihicha ganav. The murderer arises in the evening, right, to kill the poor and needy, and at night he acts the thief, right? Hami digambar v'layla yeganav. Now, that is how I just translated it, but this is obviously the JPS, which is the opposite of what the Gemara is going to translate it right now. So the Gemara says, Hamidig Amar Ubalaila Yeki Ganav, since the latter half of the Pasuk says that at night he acts the thief, Alma or Yamamahu, so the first half of the Pasuk imply that it's during the day, and the word or therefore means day. He says, no. Ha, so the Gemara says, no. Ha Tamachi Gamar, this is what it means. Just like it means in Sanhedrin, ipshita lach milta kinahora. If it's as clear to you as light, da anefashu kaate, that he's coming to kill roteachu. He is a murderer. Vinitan latzilo b'nafsho, and you're allowed to save him with his life. Now, what is weird, by the way, about that phrase? Nitan lehatzilo b'nafsho. You can save him with his life. What's the problem? There are two pronouns, and the question is, who do they write? Nitan latzi. Good, and this is an intentional ambiguity, because Gemara and Sanhedrin and Gimel makes it clear, there are two people that you're saving. You're saving the victim, and you're saving the murderer from sinning, right? So, it's clear in the Gemara that you're just as much saving the sinner, because the Gemara raises the possibility of, are you nitan latzilo b'nafsho to prevent someone from violating Yom Hazara or from violating Shabbat? And in both of those cases, it's clear that we're talking about saving the person from his own crime. So the ambiguity is probably intentional. The Gemara says, v'imisapkel chamilta kilelia, and if you are in doubt, like night, yehebe inecha kiganav. So let him treat him only like a thief. And therefore, the Gemara takes it as then you can't. But the point is that the word "or" here doesn't mean correct. Okay, I'll take a question in just a minute. Right now, I mentioned before, right, very briefly, the lumdos outside of Bava Machteret, but you understand now why this is so important, right? Because I said, is Bava Machteret equivalent to Rodef or not? So why does that matter? Because here, what does the Gemara seem to set up? Right? That is Suffolk. Is Suffolk Rodef or Rodef? No. Right? The simple pshat here is Suffolk Rodef is not a Rodef. But that may not be true, because what is this really? Suffolk Bava Machteret. And as we said, if Bava Machteret is different than regular Rodef, Bava Machteret is the guy tunneling into the house, right? So if that is different than a regular Rodef, someone chasing him to murder, so just because a Suffolk by Bava Machteret is not a reason to kill, that doesn't mean by Rodef, because it could be the Bava Machteret where, to begin with, it's a Chiddush. Why is it a Chiddush? Because he's not really a murderer. What is he? A thief. But we treat him as a murderer because we assume that he will, right, he will murder. And why do we assume he'll murder? So the Gemara says, because we assume that you'll stand up for your money, and he won't want you to stand up for your money, and he'll kill you. But he didn't really want to kill. If you stay asleep, he'll be happier, right? So it's not a classic road date, right? And that's, so the question of whether you derive from this line in the Gemara that in general, outside of Bava Machteret, a Suffolk road date is or is not treated like a road date, right, hangs on whether you think that Bava Machteret is just a subset of the normal rules of road date, or is it a different category? Right. And if you just look at Rashi, let me just show you, Rashi Tosfot, right, Rashi says, Hachi Ka'amar, right, second Rashi, Masha Nitna Lechar Torah Rishut Alababa Machteret Lahargo. that which the Torah gives you permission to kill the b'machteret. Ki dechtiv, im b'machteret yimaseh aganav v'hukav ha-meit, ein lo damim. Im barur lecha davar ke'or zhubal iskei nefashot. If it's clear to you like day that he's coming to kill, d'hainu kol adam chutz me'av al haben, which is any person besides for a father against his son, v'chayotzebo, or anything like that, shemakir bo shu'u avo me'od, that you know he loves you, which... He has an interesting way of showing that by him tunneling into your house in the middle of the night to steal your property, right? Aval shar kol adam imhaya bal mamon omed kenegdo. But anybody else, were the person to stand up for his money, la tzil mimenu mamono ze omed alav argo, he would kill you. Rotzeach uzerotzeach v'nitan reshut lekol akodem la tzil et bal mamon menafsho shel bal machteret. Uvalayla im misav galach kelayla. If you're unsure. Right, so Rashi here just summarizes everything we said, right, from the sugya. In Sanhedrin. But, right, again, I don't want to get into too much, but what you find is, what's unclear is, right, how do you really take the sugya? Is it that you only kill him, right? Right, again, here we say that a suffek, you can kill, and it's only if he's badai not coming to kill that we say that the halacha b'machteret is lifted. But the machlok rishonim that emerges from this is, again, is that true by regular rovdeis? Okay? Right, and again, that comes down to, as Ezra said, is Bam Machteret just a special case of Rodev, or is it its own category predicated on Abala Hargecha or the like? And again, this is a huge sugya in Rishonim. Correct, but because the Torah introduces this case, it might change the right because this is an explicit halacha, right? It might have unique characteristics to it. Right? And there are a lot of reasons to believe that it has unique characteristics to it. It could be a subset of Rodev, but it could be Habala Hargecha, or it could be something else, right? According to the Bechor Shor, Habala Hargecha is when you are the victim, right? Which we already said is more expansive. Rodev is a third party, correct. The difference of Rodev and Habala Hargecha. Yes, Ezra. Yes. As they know, as you guys know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, but you know. It's not as good as the movies. Yes, I do understand. Yes, I did actually understand that. But the show, but they're so good. But the show is not as good. I mean, I had to try it because, like, I really love. Which? All of them? Yes. Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, the Silmarillion? Yes, yes, and yes. What? Because I didn't know what you were asking. But the answer to all of them is yes. Which one? Yes.
It's so classic that it's all been spoiled.
And what?
All the books have been spoiled.
Really? The Silmarillion has been spoiled for you? What? That's what the shows are based on, yeah. Is the Silmarillion.
A lot of people who read the books don't like it because it's not...
Right, so I read the books, you know. Yes, okay, we're not going down this route now. You know, yeah. Anyways. What? No, it's a prequel. It's a prequel. You could. If you would like to start with The Hobbit, you can. But obviously you should start with The Fellowship of the Ring, but... And then the Return of the King, yes. Yeah. Okay. But now is not the time for that.
Yeah, I just have to point that out.
What?
I just have to point out...
No, I understand. He literally was tunneling into the house. I understand. Yeah. He also wanted to kill them.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to kill him.
And they killed him. So there you go. It's a classic Baumachter, except with a... I doubt he's a goblin. He was probably an orc. Probably an orc. But they killed him. And he was trying to kill them, and they killed him with a sword. And then took his head. I got it. Yeah, I got it. Actually, he was trying to kill both of them. But I can't believe I'm having this discussion. but for the record, if you ask, you know, unless you are a really, really, really big Tolkien nerd, I will probably beat you in a discussion about this.
Yeah, you definitely.
The Silmarillion is the history behind all the worlds. That's where this is coming from.
But then I'm sure he has like more like books that fill in. Like, I don't know.
The Silmarillion. Yes, he has other ones. He also wrote other books.
Uh-huh.
He also has interesting philosophical letters to his son.
Nice.
I don't believe this is actually Frodo. Like, in the case, if he's Frodo, he's into that.
Yeah. I mean, it could very well mean burrowing.
Yeah, of course.
Not necessarily, no. But that is actually a very reasonable way for someone to break into a house in those times.
I would stand for it.
Not if you would like to not be seen. If you're in a one-bedroom little house, it's probably better to... It's not made out of wood. It's made out of dirt. No! No! It's dirt. That's why the Gemara says it's necessary to sweep your floor on Shabbos. Because it's a dirt floor. You can't, because you'd be smoothing at a hole, which would be bona, and you'd be
yes,
chayav misa.
You
and it's not... What?
No,
of course. What do you think people did their entire life? If you're eating, and if you have... I would say kids eating, but I've seen how you guys eat. If you're eating and there are crumbs on the floor, you just leave them because it's dirt? You let it pile up?
Yeah.
No! You sweep your floor. No, it probably isn't. You try to make it smooth and nice, that's the point, but it's still dirt. It's like you're like thinking like, oh, for all of history they had marble floors.
Or like wood, maybe.
Where did they... I'm sorry. Where did they get wood from? Do you know how expensive wood was?
For me. I chopped down trees all the
time. Where exactly did they get wood for when they needed it in Israel? They imported it. The king bought it. The king made a deal with another king, right, to send his servants to help him cut down cedar trees because cutting down wood and processing them was expertise which nobody had in Israel. So where was this wood for? What millionaire... What millionaire person do you know 3,000 years ago?
Yeah, but Rabbi.
Yes. Like when you go around, right? You remember last year, you guys are doing the Ir David tour, right? You guys are doing the Ir David tour. Remember when were you guys in the Ir David tour? Right? When he said, how do we know that this house, okay, here's, guys, when you go on the Ir David, guys, when you go on the Ir David tour in a few weeks, right, the tour guide might ask you, how do we know that this house was owned by a fabulously wealthy person? What? No, we don't have the floors. But what do we have? Yes, we have a toilet. We have a bathroom in the house. Right? That meant you were like unbelievably wealthy. Okay? Yes. And for that, you were unbelievably...
Wait, a gutter system or just...
Something like that. Yeah, basic one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's why you're fabulously wealthy. Right? Yes. So, no, they didn't have wood floors. They had dirt. Yes. Okay, you're telling me that there was wood in a not great adaptation of Middle Earth in the Second Age. And you're proving that for me to the Torah. Hmm. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
No, I think it's shy to use that as a source.
Sure.
That was not a wood floor. It's not a tile.
Or marble.
Yes.
If you were really rich.
If you were really rich, you had tiles. If you really... You might. It's hard. No, but you would have some of you might have rock. There are discussions of what if you're on a Sunma. Yeah, you could do that. Correct. No, they could have stone first. There are people who have stone. Stone is not impossible, right? Tiles, you'd have to be really, really wealthy, right? Like, you know, like there are artistic mosaics and.
Like bathroom in your house.
No, like bathroom in your house wealthy. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, but what I wanted to point out was the Rambam, okay? So, as we mentioned, and Rashi quotes it here, right? The Gemara takes the word or in this pasuk as metaphorical, right? That's the Gemara's solution here. Yes? Right? The Gemara here takes the word or as metaphorical, which is meaning if it's clear to you that the person is not going to kill you, so then you can't kill him. And if you're not, right? And if it's not clear whether, well, other way around. If it's not clear whether or not he's going to kill you, you can kill him. And if it's clear he's not going to kill you, then you're not allowed to kill him. Right? And that's the solution. No, right? No. If he's unsure, then you can kill him. And if you're sure he won't, then, right? That's exactly what I said. That the question here is how much you carry over from a machteret. Right? Right? If it's unclear, so then err on assuming he is a ganav who's trying to kill you and kill him. And again, that's what I said. The big question whether that carries over to all rodev or just from machteret. Okay, but here's.
What are you supposed to do, though? Okay.
Don't. Okay. So now, I mean, obviously, the guy comes at you and starts to try to kill you. Now you know he's a rodent. That's right. Stop him. No, then you can figure it out. Okay. So the Rambam paskins based on this that What is the Rambam Paskin? You tell me.
That it's metaphorical.
That it's only metaphorical. Very good. Right? The Rambam says it's only metaphorical. And therefore, right, in Halacha Yud, he says, Hayadavar barur lo balabai, tzegan av abalav, eno hargo, v'lo ba el al iske mamon, asur lo hargo. If it's clear that he's not coming to kill, you can't kill him. Mimar hargo, rizarag nevesh. And if you do, it's murder. Shenamar v'imzarcha alav Hashem zarcha Hashem shalav imbarur lacha adavar k'Hashem shiish lacha shalom imcha al targeyu. It's clear to you that he's not going to kill you. You can't kill him. Lefirach ava baba machter al beno. So if a loving father breaks into his child's house, to eino neherag shavadai sheino hargo avol ben habal aviv neherag. But if a son breaks into the father's house, you cannot be sure, and you can't. I'm very glad that you think you.
No, in general, if it goes one way, why don't it go the other?
I'm very glad that you think you love your parents as much as your parents love you, but I will tell you that in general, that isn't true.
Parents always
love their kids more than their kids love them. I maybe not you. Maybe you have such an amazing relationship that you.
Okay, what if not your father?
Okay, does any. Okay. In general, who agrees with the sentiment? Under most circumstances, parents love their kids more. And kids love their parents.
Yeah.
Under most circumstances. Yeah, okay. This is not like a secret.
That's such an extent that the son would kill the father. If the father would love his
son. Okay, very simple question. How many cases historically do you know of a son assassinating the father to become king? And how many cases do you know historically of a father assassinating the kid? Which one is more common? There are exceptions. Sure, there are exceptions. Like there are exceptions, even in Tanakh. Sure, there are exceptions. Right? What?
The father wants an heir.
Fine. Anyways, every single Greek story ever will only give you exceptions.
Okay, but what does the Ravid say, guys? What does the Ravid say? The Ravid says something very surprising. What does the Ravid say, guys? What does the Ravid say? What? That it's not only a metaphor. He doesn't deny the Gemara, but what does he say? Take it also literally. Right? Meaning what? What does he say? Good, tell me. Good, right? He finds a way of saying that, he says, I'll read you some key lines. He says, Amar Avram, eini nimna milachto v'dati. Shneir Eli, I'm not going to hold myself back from telling you my opinion. I always wonder, like, really? Like, you usually hold yourself back? That I'm not going to hold myself back? It's as if this is the time you're not going to hold yourself back? The Ravid is among those people who doesn't usually hold himself back, you know? Remember, as I was saying to Kobe before, the Ravid is older than the Rambam. He only sees the Mishnah Torah at the end of his life, right? So he is the established Gadol, right? It's not like he needs to be deferential, and he is not, right? Ever. I it's very interesting to me to see Meir's reaction every time I get to a Ravid, because, you know, he's not expecting it. I'm like, read the Ravid. Sheepushu! Like, that is the... this is confusion. Right? You know, the Ravid is one of those people, he's quite curt. Right? This is wrong. This is stupid. This is crazy. Right? Look, there are worse. Trust me, there are worse. There are Rishonim who are much harsher than the Ravid is to the Rambam. Much. The Balaam Or and the Ravid disputes are much worse. Right? To the Ravid, when the Ravid writes in the Rambam, he'll say things like, Shibushu. Right, and once in a while he'll be harsher. Yeah, something like that. When he writes about the Balaam Or, he'll say things like, "It's a sal malei shkarif," right? Or it's a basket full of lies, right? He's more, you know, elaborate, you know. Yeah.
What's the best intel you've ever seen in all of like scripture?
Well, I remember when I was in Rambam, and David Berger, Professor David Berger, came to speak there, and he's probably right that the all-time best rabbinic, well, I don't know if the all-time, but one of the all-time best rabbinic insults was, I believe, the Yom Shel Shlomo writing in the Migdal Oz, where he just wrote that he was over Bal Tashchit Al Hadio, right? what?
English, please.
What? That's very rabbinic. What? Wait, what?
What is that?
He violated the issue of wasting things because of the ink.
Really funny.
Yeah. He's, anyways. But honestly, no, the best insults are in the, from my experience, are in the Rivash and the Mar Al-Bach.
Rivash?
The Rivash and the Mar Al-Bach.
We get an instance.
Well, it's because the Rivash will write pages and pages in rhyme of insults. Pages and pages and pages and pages, right? So long. And the Mar Al-Bach will also do that. Hundreds and hundreds of pages of insults.
In rhyme.
In rhyme. Yes.
Why don't we do that?
It
is.
That's an insult.
That's right.
I like the...
It's basically like the
beautiful, full of rhymes and puns and complex biblical allusions and, yeah.
I like the you're wasting ink better. It's much more straightforward.
Yeah, no, Rabach was not so straightforward. He'll write, like, pages upon pages. He also would, you know, especially if he's writing to Mari Berav. But he really didn't like the Mari Berav. Like, he told on the government that the Mari Berav was, like, a danger and had him driven out of the country. Didn't like the Mari Berav. Well, you know. Anyways.
That's definitely not allowed.
They didn't like each other. It was mutual.
You're driven out of the country.
I mean, the Ravid Balamor is also like that. Yeah. The Ravid Balamor is like that because, as legend goes, they wanted to marry the same girl and, you know, they had a... And the Ravid married her, and for the rest of their life, they sort of had a... Yeah. What?
They want to stop being out of the country. Did those two people meet in person?
Yes. Yes, I assume so. They both lived in Israel. One in Tzfat, one in Yerushalayim. Okay, anyways, but the Ravid says, Amar Avram, Eini Nimna Lachtov Edati, Shneir Eli, Af Al Pi Shedar Shulchachamim Im Zarcha Hashem Hashalav Derech Mashal. Right, he agrees. Even though Chazal say this as a drasha, what does he say? Af al pichein, ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. The psukim do not... No, they don't leave their simple meaning. Bayom ein arashay lahargo. So therefore, during the day, you cannot kill. She'ein ganav b'mayom el lashmata. Because why is a thief coming during the day? For money. But he's not trying to kill because
he'll be seen.
He'll be seen, right? Exactly. And then he ends off, V'chayi roshi kol mevin dai lo bazeh. I swear that by my head, that anyone who understands anything, this will be sufficient, right? So what does the Ravid say? Despite the fact that Chazal offer a metaphorical read, metaphorical, symbolic, right? What? Well, he doesn't deny it. He says, "Afal pishe darshu chachamim." Even though Chazal say it, ain't a mikra. You don't say mideb shuto. So therefore, or means both, right? Or means both. So yes. So as Eitan correctly points out, in our sugya, this creates quite a problem because now or means they, right? So what? How will the Ravid have to defend himself? It primarily means light, and secondarily means day. Correct, but it literally that he'll say that the primary interpretation is the symbolic meaning of light, meaning if it's clear to you, right, that the person doesn't want to kill you, you can't kill him, right? And secondarily, it means daytime. That doesn't create a problem. It's secondary, right? But you're right. The Ravid has quite a difficult time with our sugya because in our sugya, it's not right. The Gemara in Sanhedrin that deals with it is just trying to define the word or, but it's not trying to define the word or to the exclusion of it meaning day. Maybe, right? So it's definitely true that the Rambam has a much better read, if not in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the Gemara here in Psachim, because the Rambam's read, right, makes it that or here only means if it is clear as light, as daylight to you, etc. Whereas the Ravid also thinks it actually means day, right? And the Ramban happens to also believe this. The Ramban ala Torah on that pasuk says the same. One second.
What does it say? Like, I don't know the Hebrew.
One second. What? Yeah.
So I don't know like the actual Aramaic or phrase. So like, when does it say or in this like, situation of the person robbing them?
Right. So actually, okay. You know what? Sorry. The solution. You're right. That's the real solution here. Is that the original pasuk in Shmot says doesn't say or. What does it say? Shemesh. The pasuk in Eov says or. So it's possible that what will the Ravid just say? Okay. The pasuk in Eov or means whatever it means. But Shemesh can mean day. That or might mean night, but Shemesh will always mean morning. You're right. That's probably the better solution, is that in the pasuk in Shmot, the Ravid will say Shemesh can also mean day. Obviously means day, but here it does not, okay? But what I really wanted to highlight was the methodological point here. And again, the Ramban agrees here with the Ravid. And that is what? So what is the rule that the Ravid invokes to explain that that even if Chazal have a drasha, that the way you're supposed to read this pasuk primarily is, if it's clear to you that the person will kill you, etc., why does he assume that you must also read it as, during the day you can't kill the person? Ein ha-mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Right? That the pasuk doesn't deviate from the pshat. Now, what does that mean? So the Gemara, so in context, what it means is that even if the metaphorical read is also correct, the pshat is also meaningful. Right? The Rambam clearly does not invoke that rule here. Right? Why not? Right? Isn't this a rule that the Gemara says? Now, the Gemara originally introduces it in the context of drop one of these pages, I guess. In the context of a metaphor about a pasuk, which talks about weapons, whether it literally means weapons or can it mean Torah? And the Gemara even introduces this rule as a chiddush that Amar of Kahana Karavina Bartamne Sre Shnin Vave Gamirna Lelukule Ashas. He says, even though I've been learning for 18 years and I know all of Shas, V'lo V'yadana Dein Mikra Yom Tzeim V'Dei Pshuto. I didn't know this rule. But what's the machloket Rambam and Ravid? So someone explain to me what's the machloket. That during the day you can't kill him unless he's running at you with a knife. But correct, that if it's the day that you have that the given, right, the default rather is that he's not trying to kill you, right? Which Chazal don't say, but he says that that's obvious. Now, why? So I wanted to focus on this methodological point, right? So someone tell me, yeah. Very good, right? So what the Ravid is, so what with the Rambam, the Ravid clearly says, listen, even when Chazal add a drasha, they're not changing the pshat, they are adding to the pshat, right? They're not changing it, they're adding. And therefore, just because halachically it also means that if it's as clear as daylight to you that the person is not going to kill you, so then don't kill him, but otherwise you can kill him, it doesn't remove the fact that the pshat is also true.
Oh, the
which is, right? That's how he understands. Now, why does the Rambam disagree?
That you can only have like one explanation for each thing at a time. You can't have multiple.
What?
Wasn't it like we said that it was like Rambam said that you can only have one explanation.
When? Doesn't the Rambam agree to the rule Eina Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto? Doesn't he agree that Eina Mikra Yom Tzei Midei Pshuto? Why doesn't he apply it here? Because, yeah, why? Because it's halachic drasha. Right? That seems to me the major machloket. Right? Is that exegesis? Right? Right? Is that the Rambam seems to believe. What? Exegesis is the act of deriving something from text. Does it help if I say hermeneutic derivation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Yes, but meaning it's a derivation from the rules of how you read Sukkot, right? The big machloket seems to be that according to the Rambam, the rule of Eina Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto only applies where? In cases in which Chazal didn't offer a new halachic interpretation, right? Because in such a case, what are Chazal doing? They're not adding a level. Correct. If you have like an extra vav or something like that, and Chazal make a drasha, so obviously the pasuk still has its meaning. But if they interpret a pasuk metaphorically, what does the Rambam clearly hold? That's not just an added interpretation. It is. So, one second. Right, let me give you a mashal. Okay, let me give you a mashal before you attack me, okay? If I ask you, okay, if I, right, because you're going to jump on me. Oh, how could that be? Very simple. If I say it's raining cats and dogs, okay? Right? Which is a metaphor. Yes, we all understand that's a metaphor, right? If I tell you that's the only meaning, to it's raining cats and dogs is it's raining a lot. Not that there are canines and felines falling from the sky. Like, that's not true. I'm not adding a pshat here, right? It is purely a metaphorical read. Right? And the pshat is the metaphor, right? That's all there is. This is a, what would you say, mapitom eina mikra yotzei midei pshuto. It might also mean that it's raining a lot, but pashut, you also mean that there are cats literally falling from the sky. You would say, you're out of your mind, right? Right? Now, the truth is the same thing would be if the average person tells you, it was literally a million degrees. You would say, oh, literally. By literally, you mean not literally. And you'll say, I looked it up in a dictionary. Literally means literally. And you'll say, no, literally means the opposite of literally. And you're like, my head is exploding. Yes, right? By literally, I mean not literally. I mean figuratively, right? Sometimes it is actually the case that a metaphorical read replaces the literal words.
Right.
literal. As the meaning. No, the literal. The literal literal. Right? The actual literal of the word, right? Sometimes that's just true. No. The Ravid says that if it's during the day. If it's during the day. And if it's. Fancy. Okay. Right. So what Kobe is saying is, well, maybe you can like squeeze it, because since Chazal read it as if it's clear to you as daylight, that the person doesn't want to kill you. So maybe when it's actually day, it also happens to be as clear as daylight. Right. And therefore, but that's not what he invokes his rule as. Right now, you could say that the Ravid only says Eina Mikra Yotzei Bidin. No, the Ravid though invokes the rule of Eina Mikra Yotzei Bidin Pshuto. So Kobe says, well, maybe he only invokes that rule in a case where it also sort of works within the rule that Chazal set up, because then that shows that this drasha doesn't have to remove you from the trap. You could get very clever like that. But the Rambam seems to be much more comfortable with saying that in cases where the Mesorah tells you that it means something, right? They're not just adding an interpretation. They are removing the pshat. And the Rambam is very clear that even though the Rambam doesn't give this example, the Rambam has other examples where he thinks that's the case, right? So to give the most famous example where the Rambam believes that the case is ayin tachar ayin, an eye for an eye, where the Rambam says that it's not that there's pshat and then Chazal built on top of it. When Chazal say ayin tachar ayin means metaphorically you pay money in place of the eye, that is the pshat, right? That Chazal are telling you that this is what the pasuk actually means, right? So it's clear that the Rambam believes that there are cases in which Chazal's drasha doesn't just add a level of interpretation, but actually tells you that it's like saying it's raining cats and dogs. Like, the pshat is the metaphor, right? There is no other pshat, right? And that seems to be what the Rambam says. And here, very interestingly, there's a short chapter on this in Hamikra Misora by Rav Reuven Margoliot. Rav Reuven Margoliot is one of these very fascinating thinkers. If you talk to Rai Sklar, he's a big Rav Reuven Margoliot fan. He was the an academic librarian at the National Library at Hebrew U, and also one of these people who happened to have read every book in the National Library in that job and knew everything. And he wrote a lot of fascinating books. He wrote a book on Sanhedrin, Kor Magaliyot Hayam, but he also wrote this book, Hamikrava Misora, on different issues in Misora. He wrote a book on Shemot Hamalachim. He wrote all types of very fascinating little books. So Ina Makrava Misora is a short chapter on Ina Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. And he brings a few examples where you have this Machloket, Ravid and Rambam. But he shows that in general, the Rambam is much more comfortable, especially in cases when Chazal support it, to completely reread the pshat of a pasuk in line with the metaphor. And the Ravid is less. And the example he gives is, very interestingly, is Mashiach, right? Where
Rambam has like
where right the pasuk in Yeshayahu says that the wolf will live with the lamb, right? And the Rambam, right, and the Rambam says it means only the metaphor, meaning that the Jews will live comfortably amongst their enemies who used to attack them, right? And it does not mean that there'll be any change in nature. Whereas the Ravid says, no, right? What are you talking about? It means that there won't be harmful animals on the world. The Ravid isn't willing to accept that the pshat is not also true. It may also have a metaphorical meaning. But he does, right? So Rav Margoliot points out that this is actually a consistent machloket Ravid and a consistent machloket between the Ravid and the Rambam as to whether when Chazal have metaphorical reads, right? Is that meant? Is your default to assume that the metaphorical read excludes the pshat read, right? Or not, right? What? Okay, so you hold like the Rambam, right? But this is what he points out. If you want, I printed out the four pages from the chapter. If you want to look at the chapter.
The other thing is they added
You're giving me a headache. Yes. Yes.
Wait, and what?
Definition of literally, they added figuratively. Literally now means figuratively.
So Mordechai says, so why? So if the only pshat is the metaphor, why do we use the metaphorical read? So you tell me. I don't know. Well, why do we ever use metaphorical? What? Do you not use metaphors? Do you not use metaphors? Ever? Have you never used a metaphor in your life?
He only uses similes. They're different.
Have you never used a metaphor? Do you use metaphors all the time? Do you even know when you use metaphors? Do you even know when you're using a metaphor? Not always. So some of our language is just metaphorical by definition. So for example, right? This is a classic example from George Lakioff's book in the 80s on the metaphors by which we live our lives. There are certain metaphors that are so built into language, we don't even realize we're speaking in metaphor anymore. They're organizing metaphors. So for example, time is money. Right? He is an organizing metaphor of the English language. Right? Such as pretty much every word we use about time is money language. I spend time, I give time, I waste time, right? Pretty much every word we use, right, is just a nafkamina, right? It's just a ramification of that organizing metaphor, right? Yes. That's exactly what the metaphor means. That's exactly the point, that it's so fundamentally true that time is money that, right, that it's not, we don't even think about it. It's that our language, no, it's an organizing metaphor. That's what he points out. It's an organized, what? In English, I spend time. How did you spend your time? Wasting time, giving time. Give of your time, right? Remember, like, Reb Moshe Feinstein paskins this the halacha, right? That you're chayev not just to give 10% of your money to tzedakah, but you're chayev to give 10% of your time. Yes. What? I don't know. Figure out what 10% of your free time, whatever it means. To spend, like, generically? And we don't really use it that way. What? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it really wouldn't work. So I'm just looking at what Google Translate would say, right? The four words that they translate as spend are livalot, right? Which is how you spend time, but it means to waste time, right? It means to wear out, right? Right? Lohotzi is to take out. Right, livaz beis is to waste, or lechalot is to destroy. Right, so, yes, livalot is like how did you? Yeah, it's not a great. It's not doesn't really mean the same thing in the same way. I mean, and we use metaphors all the time. That's what I just said. Yes. So first of all, there's a benefit to it, meaning ayin tachat ayin. What is the benefit of using the metaphorical read? No, it's not. Pay for the eye. But no, what is the force of using the metaphor? Why? What does it do? Yeah, meaning it shows that you really deserve to lose your eye. Right? We're not making you, but you deserve it. Right, there is a power to using the metaphorical language.
So,
okay. Right?
So working with that, why would you use a metaphor here?
What? No, meaning there's a level at which philosophically it's true, even if in pshat it isn't, and even in halacha it isn't. Right? Meaning, we use the metaphor. Anyways.
What if it would have?
It's an interesting discussion, which I don't want to get into now, because I already spent more time on this than I really wanted to. I mean, okay, I take that back. I wanted to do this because I think it's a very important methodological point in general, and that's why I wanted to spend it on this. And I didn't know how much time I would spend in summarizing the lumdus for you of Bava Machteret and Rodev, but we ended up spending like 20 minutes on that, which is fine. It's very interesting lumdus. And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Okay, but that means we'll probably spend one more day on this. But okay, let's try to cover a few more lines. Well, No. Because we pass Kenayin Tacharayin is Mamon. Okay, no. Okay. Okay, let's just do a few more lines, and then, okay. Meitve, va'omer achoshech yishufeni v'layla, or ba'adeni, alma or yamamahu. So then he quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, that I say, yet the darkness shall envelop me, and the or about me shall be night. So or here is day, right? Because it's contrasted with Layla, right? Right? So Hazam Achikam David, Ani Amarti Achoshech Yishufeni L'Olam Haba Shudom L'Yom Achshav Om L'Zeh Shudom L'Layla Or Badlein. He says, no, you read the pasuk as one big metaphor. The David said that after I sinned, so darkness shall envelop me in the world to come, which is like day. Now that I know that I've been forgiven, even this world, which is like darkness, is light for me. And therefore, since this whole thing's a metaphor, you can't prove anything. Okay, great. I guess let's stop there, because the next one is going to take us to back directly to Bedikat Chametz. So I guess we'll spend one more day on this. But okay, like I said, I said this to you, right? I want to spend one day on this unless there's a topic that you guys really want to get into, which clearly this one you wanted to spend more time on. So it took us more time, so that's fine. And then we will continue. I really would like to get to Gimel eventually, you know? But okay, we'll stop there now for now. Okay? Shkar, guys.